Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barber Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazines, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Troller Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications, invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our store at www.greatloop.org/store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. As Beth just said, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly radio show. Our home port crew is with us, Steve, our customer service techie. I'm Janice, the director, and Beth McHugh is with us this morning. Beth is our marketing coordinator. For those non-members listening out there, the Great Loop is a continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, the Atlantic and Gulf intercoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the Inland Rivers of America's Heartland. AGLCA, as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share the sense of adventure and curiosity about America's Great Loop. Our association's primary purpose is to disseminate information and enhance the overall experience for those learning about, dreaming of, as well as exploring and safely cruising America's Great Loop. Our website is www.greatloop.org. There's a wealth of free information for anyone who just wants to explore, and obviously we'd love for you to become a member. We're very happy to introduce our guest host this week, Brad Pickle, the Executive Director of the Atlantic Intracoastal Waterway Association. As all of the cruisers know, the Great Loop would not be possible without the Atlantic Intracoastal Waterway. The Association's annual conference just ended this Wednesday afternoon in Charleston, and Brad will give us an overview of the event. Anyone who would like to call in with questions for the home port crew or Brad can call our toll-free number, 877-497-1815. Brad, welcome, and why don't you give us some opening remarks?
Well, first off, thanks for having me, and also, as we'll discuss a little bit later, thanks for being part of our conference. For those of you listening out there today, we were able to, as one of our talks, especially to wrap up the conference in a way that sent everybody off with a smile on their face, was we did have Steve talk to us about the America's Great Loop, and that was a great talk. But in essence, what we were trying to do this year is what I call opening the umbrella a little bit wider. We know that the intercoastal waterway is important to a number of people, both our commercial users, our recreational users. We also have industry partners and federal government partners in addition to our state and locals. So we had a great conference, I think, really nice tie-ins. Many of the speakers were able to piggyback on the other speakers, which is always good when you can see that there is a good synergy now with the waterway, with its challenges. We were all there trying to work on those challenges, and that was actually the focus of the conference, was keep America's promise in restoring the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway. That's our theme. And I think we had a good showing. We had a number of people, just over 60, right around 60 people, give or take a couple, but it was a really nice day and a half, and glad to have the Great Loop as part of our conference.
Brad, what was your takeaway on the conference?
Well, from my perspective, you know, the mission and the vision of the association is to try to get funding to maintain the intercoastal at its authorized water depth, which varies from 12 feet in the majority of the areas and 10 feet in Florida. That is our mission. That's our focus. And that's the reason why we can have so many varied interests, both recreational and commercial, that may not agree on some of the nuts and bolts other issues, but we all agree on water depth. And so my takeaway from this was, although we're facing fiscal challenges, the federal government has a lot of money, no doubt about that, but they also have a lot of priorities that they're trying to fund. So we are a priority, just not quite as high as the ports. And we can understand that. They're economic engines. But on the other hand, what I personally took away is that there's other partners that we can work with to make a better case for the value of the waterway. Currently, you know, we discussed in the last show that it was on, that it's based on commercial ton miles. And that's more or less is how heavy of equipment and how heavy of products are you shipping up and down your waterway. From that perspective, it's hard for us to compete. There's not a lot of weighted traffic that's heading up and down our waterway except in an area like North Carolina or Florida. However, working with our partners in the South Atlantic Division of the Corps of Engineers and also the individual districts, I think it was a good presentation or two talked about the value of equipment that's shipping up and down the waterway, and so that's another metric that needs to be considered. And on the other hand, we had a couple of great presentations from April Turner talking about the Governor's South Atlantic Alliance, which is made up of the four states, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, and their Working Waterfronts Initiative that I believe that we can really tie into. In addition to that, we had a representative from the U.S. Department of Transportation, Fran Bonsack, lives in Miami, talking about marine highways. And I think we all would agree that the intercoastal is an alternative to I-95, and it should be a marine highway, and something that we'll continue to work with her group on trying to get that established, because I believe that's another opportunity to leverage the knowledge. And then finally, the other part that I thought was great, or takeaway in addition to the funding side, was the partners, because for the first time ever, we had really strong participation, but not just the Corps of Engineers, who's a longstanding partner of ours, but also from the Coast Guard and NOAA. I think we would all would agree, and Steve, you highlighted it great in your presentation, that it's amazing to have those three entities sitting around the table hearing about the concerns.
Yeah, that was one of my takeaways, was having all three of them in the same room at the same time. I've never seen before. But my other one, my other takeaway is we need to find a way to get the recreational boaters more involved. And that, you know, I don't know how to do that right now, but we really, you know, need to find a way to get more recreational boaters to come to the conference.
I would completely agree. You know,
I would imagine if the economic impact on states like Florida and South Carolina, well, the whole intercoastal on the recreational side of boating. I mean, we must bring millions of dollars into the ports and marinas that we visit, and I think we need to band together and try to get more support for the association.
Well, the fellow from FIND in Florida had statistics on how much recreational boating means to Florida, and if you extrapolate that, it's got to be, you know, the same kind of an impact for all of the other states involved. The thing that absolutely flabbergasted me is I had no idea that FIND even existed.
Yeah, FIND's a great institution, and they were established many, many moons ago, and they literally get funding from property tax payments, which is it's unbelievable. You know, that would never work today. But I can tell you that in addition to Florida, there was a study done in Georgia talking about economic impact of the waterway, which includes the recreational aspect, North Carolina, and I'm not sure if South Carolina's done one. So we have a lot of that data, and you're exactly right, Janice. I would completely agree that that's something that we have to continue to leverage. Unfortunately, right now, as I mentioned, the metric is very simple. It's commercial ton miles. But with the different groups, and that's been a focus of mine, and we've reached out to try to grow the recreational side. And we do have a number of recreational boaters. You know, we have a recreational boater membership fee, which is completely different than our sponsors and our other higher commercial, because we want to grow that membership. It's critical. The numbers that I've heard, and I'd be curious to see if you've heard different, but just since now we're heading into what I would call the snowbird season, you know, we have at least 14 to 15,000 snowbirds that make the migration from the Northeast down to Florida every year. And so that's substantial, in addition to the people that just use it on a daily basis. There's a huge number of boat trips that are unaccounted for in the federal process, or the federal metrics that are used to fund the waterway, that we've got to figure out a better way to leverage.
I just can't believe it's so one-sided as far as just, you know, amount of tonnage moved. Just a quick question before we break for a commercial. With the port of Charleston being such a large facility and a large port on the eastern coast, why is the funding for South Carolina so low?
That's a wonderful question. I don't have a good answer, unfortunately, for you. You know, the trick is that the port, you can get in and out of the port via the entrance right there at the bay. But so there's not a value that's been attributed to the waterway because you don't have to go internally. The only two states currently that are getting funding based on that commercial ton mile metric is North Carolina and Florida. And Fine leverages their existing income, their non-federal share. They leverage that very well into making those projects go. And then North Carolina, as we heard in the presentation from Bob Kiesler in the Wilmington District of the Corps, they have a few projects. And Brian Copeland, who talked to us from PCS Aurora, he is one of those producers. And so he was, and when in his talk, that's one of the, that is the reason for that section being maintained, is because of his company being in the area. But you're exactly right. South Carolina and Georgia right now don't qualify for any stretch as far as that metric of commercial ton miles.
Well, thanks for that explanation. I'm not happy, but it's true. I think we'll break for a quick commercial, Steve, if you would.
I'm ready.
Curtis Stokes & Associates is a yacht brokerage company that specializes in great loop capable boats. Curtis Stokes is a supporter of the AGLCA at the commander level. If you're looking to buy or sell a great loop veteran from a trusted and knowledgeable broker, visit the company on the web at curtisstokes.net, email curtis@curtisstokes.net, or call anytime, 954-684-0218.
Just to make a point, that commercial was recorded a while ago. Curtis Stokes is now one of our very, very valuable Admiral sponsors. So thank you, Curtis. Beth, do you want to ask any questions, or what was your impression of the conference?
I agree with Steve. I think the recreational boaters really need to get much more involved in this and somehow get the way that the funding is allocated needs to be changed, obviously, because they are getting shortchanged in the intercoastal waterway. And maybe if there's a way to base it more on the recreational boaters and their economic impact, then maybe we will get a little more funding. And I definitely think we need to talk to the governor and say, why is South Carolina so bad? Why are they not doing anything?
If I can jump in here, Beth, because you actually just, in my perspective, hit the nail on the head. And it wasn't said, point blank in our conference, but that's something that we all are realizing and know, is that we have to better engage as an association, and we'll take this on ourselves. You know, it's a goal of mine, but we have to better engage the state and local governments. You know, I completely understand the argument that it's a federal channel that should be maintained by the federal government. I can take that argument, completely support it, understand. But the reality is there's only so much money. And when you compete against, when you put the Intercoastal Waterway, as Dylan Davis from the South Atlantic Division said, when you put the Intercoastal Waterway up against the Port of Mobile or the Port of Charleston or the Port of Savannah, we can't win. So that's a challenge that we'll have to deal with. But we know that. The reality of the situation, though, is if we can impress upon our state and local governments the value of the waterway to them, we can then have an active non-federal sponsor like a FIND that you were talking about, Janice, or a North Carolina government that's pitched in money through their general revenue to support the Corps and be a cost-sharing partner. I believe if we can bring a little bit of resources to the table, we'll get more play in Washington. You know, I had the opportunity to work a little bit in Washington, and that's something across the board in different programs that is very clear, is if you're willing to bring a little something to the table in addition to complaints, everybody can bring complaints to the table. But if you can bring some resources to the table, it's often looked upon a little bit more favorably because then they're leveraging the existing dollars they have. And so, you know, Beth, your comment to me is the key going forward as far as maintaining. It's to not just bring the letters and the resolutions, which are critical to show people that the local governments understand and the state governments understand there's a value, but also to see, is there some resources that can be leveraged against the federal resources, financials? We're talking dollars. that can make this thing go. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's what I see and our association's board sees. It's something that's going to be critical in the future.
This is going to be one of my typical off-the-wall things, but, you know, suppose we went at this totally differently and enlisted marinas to say, okay, I'm going to charge a dollar a night more for transient boats and donate that dollar to a fund that then goes to the Corps of Engineers to do dredging. I don't think, you know, I, for one, when I dock the boat, wouldn't care. But, you know, there's maybe some creative ways that we can come up with to provide funding for dredging. Well, that's a no starter.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I wonder how that would play. You know, the good thing about it is that we have marinas as a few members, and so that's something we definitely poll them about. And in addition to that, to do a plug for one of our new board members, we lost one of our board members, Greg Smith, from the Myrtle Beach area, had to step down this year, but he had 1 year left, and we added Susie Durant with the South Carolina Marine Association. Many of your listeners probably know Susie, or at least heard of the Marine Association, but she works very closely with a lot of the South Carolina marinas. And I will definitely take that question back to her, Steve, because I think that's a good one to poll her members and say, how do you feel about that? Because I'm with you. As a user of any type of resource, I'm not a cruiser. I don't use the loop. I'd love to, but I don't currently. But for an extra dollar, I'm with you. I don't see how that would be make a decision not to go to a marina for a dollar.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, maybe you can put a donations jar in the marina and let people donate to it.
Well, I can tell you from the association standpoint, we are going to do an asking campaign at the end of the year in addition to our regular membership. So, but that's just for us. That's not for physically maintaining the waterway. But I'm with you. I think we have to get more creative in how we approach this problem.
Yeah, because it's obviously that obvious that the federal government is not going to do much at this point. The shortage of funding has been out there for as long as I've been involved in boating.
And as we heard, that in addition to funding, those guys have an environmental impact issue that they've got to work through. But you're right. There's always going to be a need, and creative financing. In addition, not just the waterway, but I was reading on a couple of things that I follow today, talking about the federal government and other water resource-based projects and how they're looking at public-private partnerships in addition to just using local governments. You know, typically the non-federal sponsor for water resource projects are local governments, state governments. They're actually now trying to figure out if there's a way that they can leverage a public-private partnership. Personally, I would have to see the details on how some of those things would work, but I don't think that you're too far off in what's going to be required to keep our waterway maintained the way in which we would all like it in the future.
I do have a question. They said that the lady that spoke about the marine highways, she said that the Atlantic Intercoastal is not considered part of that program. Is there some sort of legal limitations to what kind of freight can be moved on the intercoastal? Like, can you ship consumer goods, or is it just strictly things like generators and stuff like that for industrial type of use? Do you know?
There's not a restriction.
There isn't a restriction.
No, and that was very curious. But, you know, Dr. Bonsack is somebody that I personally am really excited about getting to know better and learning more about her program, because she was brought to us. Somebody mentioned Fine earlier, and Mark Crosley was the assistant director that was there. But Fine was the one that turned us on to her and said, hey, we want you to start being more active in our association. So that was the first presentation I'd had the chance to see from her, and it was a great conversation I had with her outside of her presentation. But I think that's a new avenue that we need to look at. She talked about M95, which stands for Marine Highway 95, just like Interstate 95. And now that I'm back home, it's only been a couple of days, I'm looking forward to learning more about where M95 is. I'm guessing it's in the open ocean, paralleling I-95. But as she pointed out very clearly, we have an intercoastal that is in protected waters. And so why can't that be a marine highway or at least sections of it, be designated marine highway. And it's those types of programs that I think is really going to open the door to try to get more funding to maintain. And that ties back into recreational boaters, because in addition to being a commercial marine highway, it's not just 18-wheelers that travel up and down I-95, just like it's not tugboat operators that travel up and down the intercoastal. And that's where I think that we'll be able to leverage our participation by our recreational boaters to say, hey, we use this highway too.
Okay. Did Steve and Janice hang up?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we've exhausted this at this point, but one of the things we didn't do was, you know, we've talked about FIND, and we never did say what it really is. And it's the Florida Inland Waterway Division.
It's the Florida Inland Navigation District. It was established by the state legislature, the Florida legislature, and I can't remember the exact year of it. But in essence, what they were established to do is, first off, they are a tax generating organization, and in that, when you pay property taxes in the state of Florida, a percentage of that goes to FIND. Whether you're an inland person, whether you live on the waterway, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. But they collect funds, and then they use them for a variety of projects. They use them for marina development. They use them for definitely waterway. We'll start there. They use them for waterway development and maintenance. They use it to develop dredge islands to disposal sites. They also use it to secure easements and property to be able to build and maintain the waterway. They use the funding to supply grant funding to other organizations. They support projects that do beneficial use. And this is something that is a growing concern and issue for the Corps of Engineers and the government as a whole, is that once you dredge that material up, what are you going to do with it? There's only so much land that you can dispose of. Well, the other flip side of that is, much of the material that's dredged, especially at the inlets or where the ocean comes into the waterway, is actually good enough to go on the beach. It's beach-quality material. And so FIND is working as a state partner. You have the Florida Department of Environmental Protection that's doing this in Florida, and then you also have the Corps of Engineers to try to find beneficial use. And I see that as another opportunity to come up with a little bit more funding for the waterway, in that you can leverage operations and maintenance from the navigation side to do beneficial use and put sand on the beach, which then corresponds to another line item in the Corps budget. And through their general construction side, operations and maintenance is typically done through navigation for the removing of the sand, but then you have the construction general, which is, let's put that sand on the beach. And so you can leverage those limited dollars, at least where those inlet crossings are, to keep the waterway maintained, at the same time helping the beach. And FIND is a big partner in that. We're seeing a similar type of projects going on in North Carolina. But FIND's a great program. They've got a good group of people working that program. We're very glad that FIND has been an organizational sponsor for the Intercoastal Waterway since its inception in the late 90s. But we look forward to working more closely with them and continuing to try to use that model, although we will never be able to get the legislature, I don't believe, to pass a property tax in other states that would go to the waterway. They do give us a good model to build on. Them, in addition, you've got North Carolina with their general revenue stream. So you can find their information on the internet by looking up Florida Inland Navigation District.
What I found interesting about FIND was where there are places where they're dredging to make the waterway deeper than the authorized depth, where they're going to 15 and 17 feet in some places, where the authorized depth is 10. And that, you know, that's amazing in this day and age.
No doubt about it. I completely agree.
Brad, do you have anything else you'd like to say about the conference?
No, I'm looking forward to, as we continue on in my tenure. It's been an exciting 8 months, 9 months so far that I've been involved. I'm looking forward to reaching out more to people like the AGLCA. I had to work that one out. But more groups like yours and the recreational side, because as Beth pointed out, and I know Steve and Janice, you all both agree and discuss, it is important to get the recreational community involved. I think things, when we're talking about state and local funding, is going to rely extremely high value on those recreational boaters, a recreational boater impact, to explain to the local governments and the state governments that this is valuable to us. We'll continue to work with our National Marine Manufacturers Association's board member, David Dickerson. We also have Boat U.S. through Rick Lidecker. But we will continue to grow that side because I personally believe that's the only way we're really ever going to get the state and local governments involved, is to grow the grassroots. And so we're looking forward to that.
Well, yep. Thank you. Brad is a member of AGLCA. Brad, feel free to use the discussion forum to keep our membership aware of what's going on with your association. Steve, anything else to add?
Not now.
And Beth, do you have any comments?
No, I think that's it, although it might not be a bad idea to set up a separate little discussion forum in the forum just for this topic.
Good idea.
If you'd like to do it, I'd be happy to log on and participate in any discussions that you all have.
Okay,
and please
Steve
alert,
will set
please
up
alert
a forum me. For the AIWA, and Brad, feel free to use it.
Thank you, and if there's ever any questions that your members send directly to you all, as always, please forward them on my way, because you guys, as participants in our conference, you are members, so please let me know if there's anything that we can do for you.
Okay. Brad, thank you very much. Remember, everyone, our shows are archived on our webpage. They're also available on the Blog Talk Radio website and through iTunes. Next week, we will be having a discussion on coasting down to Mobile Bay and visiting Mobile, Alabama, and basically the cruising area of Mobile Bay and a little bit further south. That's all for this week. Everybody, have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week. We will have a show the day after Thanksgiving. Tune in our regular time at 10 o'clock on the day on Friday after Thanksgiving, which I believe is the 23rd. Everyone have a wonderful holiday, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.